In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice, and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Hi, folks. Today I'm delighted to be chatting to Tayshan Hayden-Smith, who many of you know as a TV presenter on BBC's Your Garden Made Perfect, and also Hampton Court Flower Show coverage. He's an award-winning Chelsea Flower Show designer himself, founder of the Grow to Know project, and now with the release of his new book, an author too. So welcome to the Kitchen Garden podcast, Tayshan. Great to chat to you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. And yeah, lovely to be speaking with you this morning.
Oh, that's great. So starting at the very beginning, you're born in North Kensington in London, of course. Where did your love of nature and gardening come from? What are your first memories of gardening and enjoying nature?
I think, yeah, my experience of nature, and I wouldn't even say gardening. Gardening was never something in my life or something that my mum or anyone around me spoke about. Mm-hmm. If you asked me what gardening was at the age of 12, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you. But mm-hmm. nature had a profound effect on my life growing up. I mean, whether it was running through the parks with a ball at my feet, using trees as goalposts, or my mum, you know, having a basil plant on our kitchen table and throwing it into the spaghetti or the pasta, whatever it was, or parsley, yeah. You know, or if it was in our very small garden, again, that's another one of my football pitches. I mean, my mum wouldn't have called it that, but it was definitely where I learned some of my best tricks. But I mean, yeah, my mum was a massive influence. I think that's what ties it all together is, you know, there's something really heartfelt and very intrinsic about my memories of nature and how that's connected mm-hmm. to my memories of my mum and how she was the driving force and the conduit to that nature access for me. And it was done in the most subtle and poetic of ways. It wasn't like do this, do that. You know, it was. done very how would you say it, you know, it was just part of life. It was just part of the way that we lived and part of her language and part of her aura and her energy. Mm-hmm. And so nature became, albeit not at the fore, but very much it started to thread together who I am today. And so yeah, she, I mean, my mum had this thing where she would pause the room. There's four of us, she's a single mother of four, and I'm the eldest, and we lived in a council house in Ladbroke Grove, and you can imagine how chaotic it was at times, and you know, at peak mischief, my mum would kind of pause the room and I think it's distraction tactics really and truly, but she wouldn't have quite known how much of an effect it would have had at the time, but she would pause the room and go up. Guys, can you hear that bird song? What do you think that bird is saying?
Yeah.
What colours can you see in the sunset? And if it was walking down the road, you know, she'd had an obsession with the texture of bark or the way that leaves form shapes and silhouettes. And, you know, can you see the shade, that dappled shade and on the ground? You know, what do you think it's saying to you? And so she'd almost personify nature as if it was a friend, an ally, a safe space. But of course, you know, her real agenda was just to get us to be quiet and behave. But but you know, these all came from my mum, and I think that's why I've got such a adoration for nature.
Yeah. Well, she sounds amazing, absolutely amazing. Yeah. I mean, you've had a really varied career so far. So you're a pro footballer, and now gardening activist or nature activist. What was it that inspired you to really turn your attentions towards activism, gardening? I don't know if I should say gardening, but nature activism, green spaces, improving.
Well, no, definitely. And I wouldn't even say nature activist. I mean, I'm an activist on all fronts because, you know, nature threads through everything. I mean, that, I make the case mm-hmm. that we are nature, and so is everything that we touch, we see, we feel, we smell. You know, this is all, we all part of the same ecosystem. And also, I like to think that I'm very sensitive to how we use language to portray things and communicate things. And, you know, I think activating my activism it all happened in 2017 when I was playing professionally in Austria for a team called FC Kitzbühel, and we just won the league. We were going up to the third division in Austria, you know, and it looked like, I think I was like 19 at the time, and this was my big break, you know. This was meant to be where things started to fall in place, and you know, all the years that I put into my graft and my craft were kind of coming to fruition. And I remember that night, the 14th of June, and in 2017, and I just remember, you know, we just won the league, and I'm at home in Austria in my flat, and my phone just starts ringing, you know, nonstop, and I'm kind of confused as to why, because I'm thinking, you know, what could be so urgent? And I remember someone, or my sister actually, saying, "There's a fire in Grenfell Tower," and what had happened was there was a fire, but it wasn't consuming the whole building at that point. It was bad, but you know that fires happen and they're contained. And then a few moments later, I got messages from a lot of my friends and a lot of the people that I knew, you know, and I started to check on certain people who were from Grenfell Tower, some of my friends, and you know, just making sure that everything's okay. And things weren't okay, and at this point the building was becoming kind of engulfed in flames, and so at that point I just knew the first thing I needed to do was book a flight home. And so I booked the first flight home and just came back to absolute chaos, and it was in those moments, in seeking solace, seeking understanding, and wanting to be close to others, I guess, you know we went out onto the streets to try and to help, to support, to understand. You know, we were angry, we were frustrated, we were sad, and I guess nature came to our rescue at that point. You know, whereas some people would turn to art and graffiti walls, and some people would turn to music, and you know, there'd be these amazing jazz musicians who would just improvise on the spot and bring that, you know, that comfort through music. But I just decided I was going to litter pick in this barren, derelict bit of land that had never been really thought about or cared or touched or cared about previously. I just thought, this isn't really reflective of my community. We're all gathering at this space, yet we're gathering in and amongst, you know, litter. And so I started tidying it up. And tidying it up then soon turned into gardening and planting into the ground, getting my hands in the soil, being at one with Mother Nature. And that to me was a safe space. I found it to be a safe space, and it's funny because it was safe to me, but it wasn't safe in the sense that I didn't feel wholly comfortable with the idea of me gardening, you know, me and flowers. That's not something that I put together previously, and so there was perceptions and some ideas of who should be a gardener and where should be a garden, and how do we access gardens? All these questions were going through my head at the time. And they were, I guess I was reassured by people in the community, come and join me in that garden, young and old, you know, from all walks of life. Doesn't matter who you were, where you were from. People would stand side by side with me. And this wasn't my garden. It was our garden. It was never, you know, me telling people how to do things, where to go. Because honestly, I didn't know what to do. So
right. Yeah.
This was a gardening 101 for me. I didn't have a clue what plant was what. And, you know, can tell a plant from a weed. And I know there's, you know, a conversation about what that even is now, you know. So, I mean, my access point into woods culture was not by the book, and right. I don't ever believe it will be by the book. I'm here to question, and I'm here to kind of explore and create those access points that haven't been accessed before. So therefore, I realize my position in this industry is quite an uncomfortable one for myself, because I feel a bit alien sometimes with the language that I'm speaking and communicating in ways that I do. I don't feel like sometimes it's reciprocated, but I know the bigger picture is more important than the here and now.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's what drives me.
Yeah, and it just goes to show how important green spaces are, just for our, well, for healing, but also our mental health. And it's just so important that everyone has access to somewhere where they can just sit and reflect or feel safe, as you mentioned there.
This is it. And, you know, my experience growing up, there was a lack of access to green space, and being in a garden with elders and the community, of course you learn about your community. You speak to, you know, you speak to someone who you was living here since the 60s when the building, when the Westway was built, and then you learn about how things came to be, and you learn about this building over here and these people over there and how this changed and what this, you know, what the consequence of this is, what's the environmental, social landscape. And, you know, you start to piece together, you know, how you got to where you are now. And that's the point I make, I think, is that gardens and nature have the ability to tell stories in so many different ways. And I guess, like, nature is a language that we should all speak, but unfortunately it's not one that we're all familiar with. And hopefully the work that we do with Grow to Know, Grow to Know was set up in 2020 as a result of all the guerrilla gardening that had been done in the community as a vehicle to implement change. I didn't know at the time what that would be, but I just knew that there was an energy, there was a movement, there was a momentum building, and you know, there was clearly a need for a voice and I guess an entity which tries to create more access points. I mean, you know, institutions and organizations, and, you know, will argue that they are creating those access points to communities, young people, and you know, whoever they are trying to engage. But we can always do better.
Yeah.
We can always improve. And so that's my case. Is, you know, I'm not here to compete or confront. I'm here to collaborate and coexist. And I think that's what's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if people listening to this were thinking, you know, they'd like to do something similar, albeit perhaps on a small, you know, perhaps a tiny scale, it's knowing where to start, isn't it? So I guess Grow to Know would be a good place to visit and get some ideas and inspiration and just information on how to get going with a project like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Grow to Know and Grow to Know can be quite confusing for many, because some people think that Grow to Know is a place and one garden, but actually I see Grow to Know as more of a movement. And you know, one thing that we're trying to do is make that big link between social and environmental challenges. Nature, we find those solutions. And now, in order to do that, you have to consider everything. This is my belief, is that there's many organizations that, you know, work within the education space and they do amazing things, and they work within the design space and public realm and they do amazing things, and, you know, they work within kind of community and run community events and projects. Now, like, what we'd like to do with Grow to Know is ring fence North Kensington, and I call it a green print, you know, build a green print where a child walking out of Trellick Tower, for example, is already engaged, you know, by Grow to Know in some capacity, shape, some form. They walk out onto the street, they see, you know, some you know, some sort of green infrastructure that we've had an influence in. So you think about these, some children who live on the 15th floor of a block, and their mom, they're, you know, so let's say it's a single parent household and they're in survival mode. They don't have the time to create access points to nature and talk about gardening and talk about, you know, all the benefits of it. They don't even, some people aren't even aware of it just because capacity does not allow. And I guess what Grow to Know is really keen to do is take North Kensington, create a case study out of North Kensington, in the most affluent borough in the country, but with some of the most poverty stricken communities in that borough. And I mean, Grenfell Tower is epitomizes that wholeheartedly. And so, yeah, that child will come out into the, onto their street, see, be moved and inspired, in awe of nature, go to school, and oh, there's Grow to Know, you know, involvement in the educational programming or curriculum, whether that's in the curriculum or extracurricular, and then, you know, community events, and then as they get older, we're delivering, you know, kind of employment and career pathways. And ways in which that, you know, we want to create those pathways. It doesn't matter how we do that. We want to create those access points into nature, whether that's through education, community, design, you know, or creativity. You know, maybe it's something that you enjoy doing and something that you enjoy being in. It doesn't have to be an end goal. I just think we're all part of nature and we need to really feel that.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so inspiring. I really hope you succeed. Sounds amazing, and as you say, it would be a real beacon, wouldn't it, for other parts of the country to follow. Great. Moving on to your book, we mentioned you're an author now as well, which is great. Amongst the many other things that you're doing, I don't know how you've had time, but you have. So new book, Small Space Revolution, I should say, on sale from April the 4th. But it's at its sort of heart, there's some great case studies. You've mentioned what you're trying to do there in Kensington. You sort of draw on some case studies from all over the world, really. So there is a lot of like-minded people out there who are doing these things, aren't there? And some very, as I said, very inspiring reading through some of them. I mean, have you got a sort of one that stands out for you that you know, you really think, wow, you know, that's inspired me to go on and do what isn't an easy thing, you know, trying to persuade people to allow you to do what you're trying to do?
I think, well, what first I'd like to touch on, there's so many amazing things going on worldwide, not just nationwide, but worldwide. And I think, you know, thinking about the way that the chapters are set, it's not like by saying rethink or repurpose or reimagine or rewild, it's not creating something new. It's just going back to what already exists and what already is, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for people to realize is that, you know, as much as we want to believe that we're doing something so innovative and amazing and, you know, unique, actually, you know, what's really needed is going back to, you know, back to Earth. And yeah, I mean, in terms of a big inspiration of mine, and I will say someone who's had a big influence on especially when it comes to being bold, being brave and being resilient, and he probably wouldn't want these words attributed to him, because he makes the case that this should just be normal, this should be the way anyways. And caught in two minds, you know, like, you know, there's a confidence to what he does that, you know, just can't be matched. He's so about Ron Finley, the gangster gardener in the US. Uh-huh. And while his way he communicates, the way that he talks, and the way that he stands up and stands strong, I think is to be admired. And, you know, I'm not one for really idolizing anyone. I take inspiration and appreciate glimpses and parts of people that I'm exposed to and that I come to know. But yeah, what I know of Ron Finley is a force for good. And again, he's shifting that narrative and shifting the language around horticulture, gardening, who should be a gardener, who has access to gardens. You know, this is someone who took over a sidewalk. I mean, I'm using the American terminology here. Took over a sidewalk and turned it into a food forest. And he makes a point. Why is that contentious? Why is that?
Yes.
Why should that be confronted by the authorities or through the I guess the legal system? How does that even make sense? How have we got to this point? You know, and there's a lot to be said about land ownership and the responsibility of those that have access to land and the responsibility of those that you know, are gatekeeping those spaces. And so the onus is really on, you know, I'm just bringing it back to the UK, but the onus is really on those that have privatized those spaces. And now there's a conversation to be had, and there's a middle ground to be found. You know, what I'm not saying is open, or what I'd love is every door to be open, but that's not going to happen. Let's have a conversation about how we can try and facilitate and enable and harness and connect. You know, being so private and exclusive means that you lose out on the opportunities to connect, and I think that's just such a beautiful thing. So yeah, anyways, Ron Finley is someone that I take a lot of inspiration from, and you know, we definitely see him as a brother. So he's someone who I appreciate, and every time I catch up with him, it's always as motivating as the previous time. So
I mean, there's so many great case studies in there. I think one of my personal favourites was the Onion Garden. So, you know, it's bringing it back to back to London again. But that's just amazing. You've got one person, like you mentioned there with Ron, but you've got one person who's a driving force behind it. And that's just so important, isn't it? You know, someone who's got that idea and inspiration that can carry everyone else along.
I tell you what, because I didn't find Jens by searching him up and you know, realizing, oh, that's where he is. I was looking at a school garden in Westminster or near Victoria Station. Uh-huh. And one of the teachers said, you must come and look at this. And I was thinking, oh, where are you taking me? You know, there's all these high rise buildings in Victoria, you know, made out of glass, steel and metal and, you know, very urban.
And,
here we came, this very smiley guy called Jens, and you know, full of joy, and I was looking around like a kid in a sweet shop, and it just reinforced the idea around how art can captivate minds, you know. And if we see the world artistically, then that's how we get people engaged and to fall in love with nature. I mean, that's what my mum did for me. You know, she made me fall in love with nature because she saw it in such an artistic way. But I do feel like there can be quite stiff and rigid language and stiff and rigid approaches to engaging, especially young children, with nature. Whereas actually we can be a bit more abstract. We can be a bit more loose with it. We can be a bit more, how do you say it? It can be a bit more multi-layered, you know. It can be a bit more layered, a bit like an onion, right? Jens is another force for good, you know. Always smiling, always full of joy, and you know, another place if you're in London to go and visit and support the cause. Actually, I know that he's doing a lot of fundraising to support what he's doing. He wants to expand and extend. So beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. Should also say, apart from inspiration through, you know, projects which are ongoing, that readers of the book can learn about some great projects in there. Loves some really good DIY projects, really nice and sort of simple. Using bits you might have laying around. You're not going to go and spend a fortune, especially like the mushrooms in the laundry basket. I thought that was inspired. One of the other things was, you know, you talk about tree planting. There's a project there for tree planting, and you say, oh well, you know, why not put that on a trolley or on sort of a wheel base so you can create your own shade wherever you want it. And I'm thinking, why didn't I think of that? You know, I've been, I don't know how many years, so I've never thought of that. That's inspired. So lots of little things like that, which are really great. I really enjoyed.
And these are ideas that I picked up along the way and through collaboration and connecting with others. And really and truly, this is just, you know, a conduit to bring it and amplify these ideas, you know. So yeah, I can't take all the credit for all these ideas. I mean, like I said, you know, the whole idea of this book is giving a platform to the ideas and not taking, not trying to take credit for them. You know, I don't, you know, it's not something that I think is necessary. I think it's something that everyone can take inspiration from, and ideas evolve and ideas snowball, and hopefully from this, you know, someone can pick it up and look into it and go, oh, I could do that, or they could do something different, but it might evoke that thought and spark something within them to get involved. So
well, you might not want to take all the credit, but we need people like yourself who are prepared to, you know, pick up the mantle and just run with it, run with these ideas and bulldoze the way through, you know, as you say, trying to persuade people this is the way to go, which it certainly is. I mean, you've got a young family yourself now. A lot of the theme I've noticed through your work and through the book is encouraging children, as you were encouraged by your mum, you know, originally. You know, is there more that we can do to encourage children at school, perhaps? I mean, and money's always the thing, isn't it? But, you know, wouldn't it be great if every school had a school garden or just a, you know, I'm not talking about necessarily growing veg and things like that, a traditional garden, but just a green space, isn't it, to wander out into and to be able to see it. That would be amazing. Play.
And I mean, access starts through understanding and observation. I mean, even if you don't have space, which a lot of people don't,
increasing, no.
You know, that will only increase. But, well, hopefully not, but the trend is, you know, there's more and more people addressing their space. But observation and understanding is the key point. I mean, I see a plant behind you in a pot.
Poor old thing, yeah.
But if you think about it, if you have a plant in a pot in your home and you don't have a garden, you don't have a balcony, you don't have a roof or whatever, you know, that can be your source of inspiration. That can be a point of conversation.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think of that? You know, what do you think the flower looks like? What do you think that plant would be called? And again, like personifying it and looking at it as art and, you know, allowing the children to run with it, you know, give them ownership. Yeah. And I think the more we give, you know, if you look at the political landscape at the moment, there's a lot of older people running countries, but I'd like to think, what would children do if you put them in charge? And I think the world would be full of plants, full of life, full of joy, full of happiness, full of warmth and full of play. And I think we lose that as we get older. And I'm really trying to keep hold of my inner child, because that's my happiest place. But I think, you know, let's let children be children and enjoy the world in the beautiful ways that it presents itself. But I think we take that away from them way too early. And just creating those access points of observation and understanding is a really good start, even if you don't have space.
Well, Tayshan, it's been so inspiring talking to you. I have to say, it's been really great. They've given me a lot of food for thought, and I'm sure a lot of listeners as well. You know, they'll be thinking about all these things, and that's great, isn't it? Just to get people thinking, to get the ball rolling, to get it started. And I think you're doing that. And I think, you know, the book is great as well. I do encourage listeners to look out for it. It's called Small Space Revolution, published by DK, and it's available from April the 4th. So look out for that in bookshops and online. Thanks again, Tayshan. It's been really great. I really enjoyed talking to you, and thanks for your time.
Likewise, I really appreciate it. And thank you for having a conversation.
No, it's great. Well, it's been, as I say, an inspiration. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Mom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.